New research from Maynooth University is recommending the development of what's called a whole family approach within the mental health services. Let's find out more about that, because we're joined by Maynooth University Centre for Mental Health and Community Research Director and Primera Principal Investigator, Professor Sinead McGilloway. Good morning, Professor McGilloway.
Good morning, Ken.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Now, a whole family approach within the mental health services, this research is recommending, including what's called automatic consideration of children when a parent has a mental health illness. We'll talk about the specifics in a moment. But first, tell me what this five-year Primera research programme on mental health is all about.
Well, we know, Ken, that about a quarter of all families have at least one parent who has or had a mental disorder. And we also know that that increases quite considerably, by something in the region of 40 to 70%, the risk of children themselves developing serious mental health issues, as well as physical illness, impaired educational and occupational outcomes, and so on. So it places a substantial burden on also on the partners and the children in these families. So we set about trying to identify and help to implement a structured program or intervention that would enable clinicians to more effectively support these families in Ireland. So this is families where one or more parents has a mental health challenge. We then, having done that, we then went on to evaluate or investigate, using rigorous methods, the extent to which this program or intervention works. And the name of the program is Family Talk. It's an evidence-based program first developed in the States, and this was the first time that this was implemented in Ireland. So it's essentially a seven-week, it cannot be up to 10 weeks actually, but it's a seven-week program intervention, which involves working with these families in a holistic way. Okay, so.
And is the rationale for that approach, Sinead, is that, for example, which in other aspects and other conditions in society, that the mental illness of one family member can be should be or needs to be taken as if it's a let me explain this, sounds quite awkward maybe, but is it because you're classing it then that mental illness in one family member, particularly a parent, has a ripple effect and becomes a family disease or a family problem?
Yeah, not so much a disease, Clem, but absolutely, it becomes a family problem. So you can imagine if you've got a parent with a serious mental health issue, it can impact hugely on the kids. The children, for example, can internalise a lot of this. They often don't understand what's happening with the parent. They don't understand what a mental health problem is or a mental illness is. They may feel very worried, very concerned about the parent. They may also experience guilt. They may feel that somehow it's due to them. Equally, the parent often doesn't know what's going on in the child's head or how their own mental illness or mental health challenge is impacting on the child or children in the family. So it's really about trying to bring the family together to talk through some of those issues. It's very a kind of strength-based approach, if you like, very much involving, first of all, the parents. So the clinician will talk to the parents first, they'll then talk to the child or the children, find out what's going on with them, and then bring the two together and discuss the whole impact of how they understand mental illness and the impact of mental illness on the family.
And the numbers are quite significant, with an estimated 23% of all families have at least one parent who has had who has or had a mental health disorder. And your research showing that the lifetime risk of mental illness for their children vastly increases by between 41% and 77%. You use the word that children internalise what they're seeing. So, you know, to use that term again, ripple effect within the cocooned family unit. If the children, if the situation of mental health in the parent is not treated within the family context, am I correct in inferring then that it means a very strong likelihood or indicator that children in turn down the line will suffer mental illness?
Absolutely. We reckon that about one third of kids may develop moderate problems, another third may develop severe mental health challenges. The figures vary hugely because we're really working off figures from across the world in many different jurisdictions with many different service systems, Clem. So it's quite difficult to get the actual estimates there, but we do know that the evidence is overwhelming that these children can suffer quite badly themselves unless there's some kind of early intervention. And that's what this Family Talk programme is all about. That's what Family Focused Practice is all about. Getting in there early, talking to the children, communicating with the parents, finding out what is going on in the family. And our findings are actually really interesting because what we found was that our families who participated in the Family Talk programme, okay, versus those who were in a waitlist control group, so they didn't get it immediately, they got it 6 months later, these families, Family Talk families, did much better, and at a level that was, if you like, statistically significant. So it just didn't happen by chance alone. So we're seeing in these Family Talk families the children presenting with far fewer, if you like, behavioural and emotional problems, including lower levels of depression, less conduct problems. The parents themselves reported improved mental health, better coping, better resilience. There is better mental health literacy all around. So what that means is that the parents and the children were understanding much more about the condition itself. Parents were understanding more about the impact of mental illness on their children, and the children were understanding much more about their parents' mental health challenges. And all of that combined to lead to much better enhanced family relationships and functioning. And we find that in our statistics, in our what we call our quantitative data, our assessments, but we also find that in our interviews. We interviewed 45 parents and their partners and children, and about two-thirds of the families really we found benefited substantially from this program. And they talked at length to us about how it had really helped to improve their whole family functioning, their communication, their own coping and resilience as a family. And that was regardless of diagnosis or mental health settings, because this program was being delivered. And I think this is a really important point, Clem, in the context of services that are traditionally quite segregated in Ireland. This program was delivered by clinicians and practitioners, not only in adult mental health services, but also in child and adolescent mental health services, as well as primary care psychology and practitioners from TUSLA, and also we had involved St. John of God services too. So it was very much a collaborative effort with families and clinicians and practitioners across a number of sites in Ireland.
And when one looks at some of the statistics emerging from your research, it couldn't be more timely or more needed, because Ireland is rated, you have found, to have the third highest incidence of adult mental health illness across 36 countries in Europe. That's shocking. Costing the Irish state €11 billion per year, it's estimated that 280,000 children are dependent on parents who have a mental health illness. I mean, those statistics alone are shocking. And I mean, the core issue in your research, if I might be so bold and presumptuous to sum it up, is that treating parents' mental illness in isolation, with the children being marginalised, does not ultimately deal with the situation that society will encounter down the line as those children mature.
Absolutely, Clem. That is very much the case. I mean, we know from a vast amount of literature across the world, we know about the importance of early intervention and prevention. As I said, you get in there early, you can prevent many problems from emerging down the line. And there are costs there. There are not only personal costs for the families themselves and for the children and the partners, but there are obviously costs for services as well, in terms of potentially having to treat the intergenerational impact of these kinds of problems. And that is why it's so important that we can get funding for these services. This research was funded by the HSE, and we would love if the HSE could provide some funding for the service. For example, in Northern Ireland, they now have Think Family Social Workers, focusing specifically on just this topic. So we know what we need to do. just need to do it now on the basis of the evidence here that we've provided.
And indeed, your evidence shows that it's a no-brainer, that particular strategy
Absolutely.
Of a whole family approach to mental health services, including automatic consideration of children when a parent has a mental health illness, is absolutely necessary. Again, to remind listeners of some of the statistics from this research, an estimated 23% of families have at least one parent who has or had a mental health disorder. Children with a lifetime risk then of ongoing mental illness themselves of 41% to 77%. That's children who are in that context of a family with a parent with a mental health illness. And to remind you again, Ireland is rated to have the third highest incidence of adult mental illness across 36 countries in Europe, with 280,000 children dependent on parents who have a mental health illness. Shocking, I have to say. So timely, this research from Maynooth University recommending the development of the family approach within mental health services. And lead investigator in this primary research project, Maynooth University Centre for Mental Health and Community Research Director as well, Professor Sinead McGilloway. Thank you so much, Sinead, for that. It's been riveting stuff, I have to say, and very, very welcome contribution to the whole mental health area.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Yeah, keep your messages coming in to us, 0833 97 97 97 on the text and the WhatsApp, as we go now to the Cathaoirleach of the Athy MD, Fine Gael Councillor Ivan Keatley. Morning, Ivan.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Motions that you brought forward to the recent meeting, and first of all, you wanted the council to take in charge the Fair Green housing estate in Timalyn. What response did you get there?
Yeah, the Fair Green is a small development in Timalyn of bungalows that is largely completed. The houses are completed, but the wear and course and some minor drainage works are not completed. And sadly, the developer that is in place there at the moment has been promising us, I suppose the MD members, on behalf of the residents, that the works would be completed over the last 2 or 3 years, but sadly they're not. So what we've asked Development Control to do is to go back and give the summer months, so in other words, 3 to 4 months for those works to be completed, so the council can complete the taking in charge process. Now, as you can see in the response, there is a wastewater treatment plant on site, and that will have to be dealt with separately. I intend to go back to the residents over the coming weeks to see can we organise a management company to look after that element, because otherwise we'll be waiting too long, because Irish Water have yet to come up with a protocol for the taking in charge of wastewater treatment plants that are, I suppose, the developer provided and of that size and nature. So it has been agreed by Development Control that is the best way to proceed.
Okay, on this programme we have chronicled issues with rural areas and transport, and it seems as though you're highlighting this as well with the motion recently. You wanted the council to engage with Local Link, Bus Éireann and the Department of Education to resolve the lack of transport links with the Narromore, Calverstown area and St Kevin's Community College in Dunlavin. I suppose worth pointing out as well, Ivan, that rural areas like this, there's no secondary schools around them. They have to get buses to them, so it's important to have those transport links.
It's vital, and myself and Minister Hayden met with a group of parents belonging to over 30 students in the Greater Narromore area that have no transport, public transport to St Kevin's in Dunlavin, which has become the main secondary school for that area. And I suppose there's an anomaly in the way in which Bus Éireann are dealing with these children and teenagers, because while they're on one hand providing concessionary tickets, the service is just not adequate. There's the nearest pickup point is over a couple of kilometres away, and there is very little capacity on it. So
essentially people have to get dropped to a bus stop as well.
Well, what is happening is the parents have carpooled for the last couple of years and are essentially driving to Dunlavin on I suppose rural roads that are not great, as was pointed out to myself and Minister Hayden at the meeting, the parents have no choice now. This, you know, Dunlavin is the main school. Mm. So on one hand, while Bus Éireann are saying that, you know, there are other options for the parents, the reality on the ground is that there are no other options. And I suppose while the response says that Local Link are not responsible for providing transport, and I suppose strictly speaking they're not, but we have to come up, we have to get the Department of Education and Busairn to sit down and provide transport. That is the ultimate solution here. Mm. Now, the deadline for the applications passed a couple of weeks ago. So these parents have applied, so we're still waiting to hear back from Busairn. So I'm asking the council on behalf of those parents to write to Busairn and the Department of Education to point out this anomaly again, as the parents have been doing over a number of years now. And myself and Minister Hayden will be following up directly with the Minister and the Department.
Yeah, I think that's very important.
Have something adequate provided in September.
Very important, very worthwhile bringing that to the public's attention as well. Just finally then, Ivan, and briefly on this, you just looked for dates, for application dates for the Athy Municipal District Sports Grants. What are those dates?
Yeah, those dates are from now, Shane. So the grants opened up this week and are going to remain open until the 8th of July. We asked for a longer application period because, as you know yourself, the sports clubs around the Athy MD are very, very busy at this time of year with underage and all the rest. So thankfully, the Community Department have agreed to that request. And I'd encourage all sports clubs around the Athy Municipal District. Unfortunately, this is not a county-wide grant, but it is and has been providing much needed funding for rugby, soccer, GAA, all types of sports clubs right around the MD. Okay. For the past number of years, and it is very, very flexible, so clubs needn't be afraid that they have to spend the grant on a specific type of infrastructure. It can be used for anything from insurance to flags to nets for the goals. It's very, very flexible and very, very worthwhile, and the grant up to 3,000 euros will be made payable to successful athletes.
Okay, Ivan Clem here. Before you go, a listener has just WhatsApped in, Owen might have seen this, wants to know what's happening about roadworks in Moon. They seem to be ongoing, says a listener. Is that the case?
They are ongoing, unfortunately, Clem, and the money that was allocated to Moon last year has been taken back, essentially, by the department. So what we've asked the council to do, they have a new sustainable transport team up and running, and we've asked that team, along with the design team in Clare County Council, to come up with a set of drawings, because when the work started there, Clem, there was uproar locally, essentially, over the plans and the lack of detailed drawings and the lack of consultation at the time. So unfortunately, the Municipal District Office doesn't have the capacity at the moment to provide the drawings. So that Moon and the Timelin area that was granted funding under the during the lockdown, that funding is now gone.
All right, so basically people are stuck with those roadworks for quite a time to come.
No, the roadworks on the footpaths have been completed in Moon area, but yeah, the road surfacing has to be, and essentially the road surfacing and the junctions that need the work done. That'll have to be funded by the council.
All right, so it's not going to happen in the short term anyway.
Not in the next couple of months, Clem.
All right, okay. Chairperson of the Athy Municipal District, Fine Gael, Councillor Ivan Keatley. Thanks for that, Ivan. Motions he brought to the recent meeting. Now, yesterday you'll recall on the programme that Elizabeth, you might let us know how you got on afterwards. Elizabeth said, "I'm so annoyed. I'm a customer of Sky for 10 years and plus. I got upgraded 5 weeks ago in terms of the broadband and new queue boxes. The second day of the service, everything failed, and basically her mother is 93 years old and she needs to be able to make an emergency call." Not her mother, but Elizabeth needs to be able to make an emergency call if anything happened to her mother. But the phone line was down, the whole Sky service was down. 5 weeks she was trying to get on the Sky with no answer. Well, we mentioned this and highlighted it on the programme yesterday, and lo and behold, Sky Ireland rang us here in KFM at approximately 12:45 yesterday, wanted details, name and phone number of the texter in question, said they were resolving the issue and regarding it with the utmost importance, and they were going to get in touch with Elizabeth yesterday afternoon. Happy days, another example of Kildare Today working for our listeners. So, and well done, Sky, on coming back, but it shouldn't have taken 5 weeks, but at least they were prompt.
I don't know how they heard. Maybe they were listening yesterday or whatever else. But Elizabeth, you might let us know how you got on with Sky yesterday afternoon. Now, another issue of concern in the county is that of the county-wide draft development plan, which is underway at the moment. Mick, good morning.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, Mick doesn't want to give his real name, but we know who Mick is. We've been contacted, Mick. Well, what's basically the issue that you have regarding this county development plan? You feel that planning regulations of the county are restrictive enough already, but under this county-wide development plan, are you saying you feel they're going to get much more strict?
Yes, they're going to get much tighter than they were previously. There's quite a few changes, little tweaks here and there, just making things more difficult, but probably the one overall change, which it's a new thing altogether brought into the new plan, this is that there's now going to be a limit where they're going to count the number of houses per kilometre squared, and if there's too many houses in the area, then there won't be any more houses allowed, basically.
Now, essentially, over the years, we've heard that it's getting increasingly more difficult all the time to get permission for one-off houses in the county. And another listener, Lindsay, pointed out to us that currently, the conditions for farmers and people with rural businesses to get permission are easier than for others. But in the new plan, to qualify for the easier conditions, you'll need to have 15 hectares of land or be able to prove it's your main daily employment and source of income.
Yes, so obviously that's quite a change. And like the existing plan as well, you know, you could be operating a rural business. It didn't have to be farming. You could be doing some kind of craft industry, making furniture, pottery, whatever it was. That would be allowed as a rural business. But now in the new plan, it's solely limited to farming, agriculture or horticulture.
Yeah. And worse than that, Mick, is that currently under the existing plan, you have to have lived 12 years in Kildare to get planning permission for a rural house. But under the new plan, you'll have to live in Kildare for 16 years.
Well, that's it, yeah, which would obviously affect some families where the family might have moved in when the kids were teenagers and, you know, they're now growing up, they're in their 20s, but they have to have been here 16 years, so, you know, if they only moved here when they were 12 years old, then they'll have to wait until they're 28 before they can look for a house.
Yeah, it's staggering, the restrictions. Yeah. And probably the most significant change, we're told, is a new section about what's called rural residential density, which says that houses will be limited to 15 houses per kilometre squared generally, and a maximum of 25 per square kilometre where the area is very enclosed or well screened. So there's even going to be... It's what you're saying essentially, Mick, is that this new countywide development plan is going to make it even more restrictive than it already is, which is considerable, I would say myself, to be able to build a house in a rural area in this county.
Yes, well, this limit of 25 houses per square kilometre is very significant because, well, people mightn't know what a square kilometre is, but it's like it's 100 hectares or 250 acres. So it's 25 houses in 250 acres. That's one house in 10 acres, which, you know, that's very low density, very sparse.
And this means that even if your family live in the area and could give you a site, you will not get planning permission for it in that area on your own family farmland if the density has already been passed.
Well, that's it. And, you know, the reality is that most parts of the county, you know, houses tend to be in clusters, so you'll have a cluster of 10 houses here and then 100, 200 metres down the road another 10 houses, so it very quickly adds up to 25 houses. So unless you're going to go and live somewhere in the middle of nowhere a long way away from any neighbours, there's going to be 25 houses in most 1 kilometre squares wherever wherever you look in the county.
Indeed. Now, of course, the county-wide development plan is of interest to every single person who lives in County Kildare. And just to remind you that these new rules, which will place further restrictions on the already very tight restrictions on getting planning permission in this county, submissions to the county development plan will close by the 24th of this month. So you need, if you have concerns or you want to make a submission, not just on housing, but on any aspect of development in the county development plan, you only have until the 24th. That's less than a week away. Get onto the Kildare County Council website and you'll find out all the details behind the plan. Meanwhile, Lindsay, thanks for the email that we got, and Mick, thank you for contributing this morning.
Thank you, Clem.